What lies at the heart of the American paranoia? Is it a unique neologism in history, a world built anew on the foundations of good government, one reserved to the freedoms of the people, an enlightened system built on a constitution, or one with the cruelties of the old world reflected back upon it, secretly buried underneath and operating the machinery? How darkly gazes an American spirit, washed clean in the myths of purity and triumph, whereupon it glimpses that seedy underbelly that perceives, however briefly, its own dark shadow. Richard Nixon was a historical figure, 37th president.
I, Richard Billhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear.
And Nixon was a living myth, marred by corruption and scandal.
What is the most important issue confronting the American people?
I was a shill for a crooked card game.
Well, I'm not a crook.
We are all crooks.
Yet resolute in his ideals, paranoid, perhaps, of the reality that cast those shadows of illusion onto the American dream.
I've earned everything I've got.
Terrorized by the depths of his own country.
Not me, not for the men are born.
He was the image of the American ideal, born into a middle-class, religiously devout Quaker family, a Navy veteran, a patriotic basic bitch who played their game and was caught up in the net he helped cast.
What I'm trying to say here is that the Committee of 100 had a plan, and that was it. They gave me the blueprint for my life.
It's hard to believe that I missed this one. I'd heard of it, but I hadn't seen it. A juicy one-man performance play dressed up as a film by famed director Robert Altman. As a film, Secret Honor keeps the audience confined within the paranoid bubble of the former president, with more than enough aspects of Nixon to populate all the characters you would expect in a film, the many faces of Nixon.
Now, you have read in the press the reasons for the Watergate affair. Today, my client is going to reveal to you the reasons behind the reasons under the mask.
It is surprising that no one popularized the conspiratorial angle of this Nixon film. A fictional film, as the credits make clear, but a film that embodies the reactions of the country in the 70s to Nixon's downfall and his dark, unraveling mind.
My client has been driven almost mad. He has had to carry the most terrible secrets of all. If the American people knew what really happened, like the killing of President Kennedy and the Warren Report and so forth, the nation could not have stood the whole story.
A fictional film, nevertheless, one based on the many kernels of truth and historical fact, and one that cast a particular shadow over Bohemian Grove and the secret power structure of America.
Up there in Bohemian Grove, deep in the California Redwoods, they took my client up to Bohemian Grove. Now that is where the China plan was at. That's where I got the message. Yes.
Under the potent myths surrounding freedom, elections, democracy, the American way, and so on.
Well, Your Honor, they call the tune the Committee of 100. They took me back up there, you know. Oh, yeah. Back up to the Grove. No drinks this time. No. This was strictly business. Dick, you are going to be President of the United States. But that night, I just wondered. In that Redwood Forest, understand what they told me? They told me that the China plan would be my Excalibur. I knew it was either go all the way with the China plan people or suffer the consequences. That's right.
What does this paranoid fever dream of Nixon, a fictional film, what does it tell us about the real president?
I just wanted power, that's all. I mean to be president, you have got to have power.
Do presidents really run the country?
From George Washington to Richard
Nixon.
Or are
presidents machines to be operated and run? If Russ Baker's Family of Secrets biography on George H.W. Bush can be trusted as a source, then it was Henry Kissinger and George H.W. Bush, two of Nixon's closest advisors, linked powerfully in the chains of his political patrons, who advised him at last to step down and resign in the Watergate scandal.
Henry Kissinger. Kissinger. Especially him. The cowboys, Bush, they get the CIA. They cut Henry off at the pass in Paris, I see. And that Judas son of a turned out to be a Rockefeller trader all the time.
Both were infamous as members of the Bohemian Grove and towards the top of the circle of elite power surrounding presidents.
The guts up front. I had to be very cautious.
The general assumption is that Nixon's impeachment was inevitable. The general assumption is that Nixon went down for his role in the cover-up, not for crimes committed. For Nixon himself felt that he had never done anything wrong.
Your Honor, Watergate was nothing more than a misdemeanor, copping a plea. Prisoner in the dock is guilty. One crime only, and that crime is being Richard Milhouse Nixon. Nothing more than a convenient hook upon which to hang my client's political body.
The flows of shady money into his slush fund with the unfortunate and cartoonish name CREEP, the Committee to Re-Elect the President, was another passive vehicle for Nixon, which appeared to operate without his direct knowledge and awareness, yet nonetheless helped to bring him down. The general assumption is that Nixon was a figurehead presiding over a nebulous web of clandestine activities in the larger military-industrial complex and in the sprawling international intrigues of the American intelligence apparatus. Nixon himself, only at the helm of shadows and light, predestined to endeavor towards the greater good for the advancement of his great silent majority, using his own illusions of the American way. Nixon didn't just spy on his enemies, foreign and domestic, on protest groups and movements he was opposed to, didn't agree with, and he didn't just spy on his own staff and advisors and people within his own party. Or his wayward brother.
Nixon burgers!
I think
the press got a hold of that Howard Hughes loan to my brother for that wacko scheme of his to sell Nixon burgers!
But infamously, on himself as well. He bugged his own White House, his own Oval Office, recording hundreds of hours of tapes.
Would you erase everything, please, back to the Committee of 100, please?
But he didn't stop with himself and his intimates either. The political turmoil of the 60s into the 70s meant an increasingly paranoid national apparatus. Civil rights advocates tried to warn us. They were called paranoid too. But the whole country was bugged, in principle anyway. Mass surveillance through every means of communication. NSA, CIA, FBI, and dozens of other agencies were unleashed, and surveillance on an entire nation underway.
Then I tried to join the FBI. I got turned down again. I worshipped Hoover.
Covert operations like COINTELPRO went well beyond the bounds of people's individual rights and the idea of civil liberties with rights reserved. HUAC, the House Committee on Un-American Activities, propelled Nixon to fame, along with the likes of Reagan, as they hunted down the shadows of perceived communists and built up a threat that may or may not have existed inside the country, but one which helped to destroy freedoms and drive the narrative of the 20th century.
Khrushchev is a cold, hard, ruthless man. He feeds upon weakness and doubt.
There is no way that we can prove that you and Alger Hiss were in the Communist Party at the same time, but we can prove this. I know I can prove that you and Hiss knew each other.
Mr. Hiss is lying.
The communist Red Scare dialectic, integral to the Republican wing of the two-party post-war machinery.
You were both creatures of the party, and what are you now? Both creatures of the government.
As usual, we won the war but lost our freedoms, the real American way.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
Nixon, a fascinating vestige of 20th century politics, of the post-war world order.
We feel powerful, prosperous.
A creature of the swamp, whose corruptions and scandals...
When you hear the criticism sometimes of the military complex in this country...
...were matched only by his paranoia about the machinations operating just under the surface.
You know what I did? I sold my soul at Bohemian Grove. For sh**. I kissed Rockefeller's ass... all over me.
This clip is so fascinating that I'm surprised no one seems to have picked up on it yet.
I sold my soul at Bohemian Grove.
It is fictional, but it does tie a thread to the known facts. It does capture the ethos of a man and his times. And Robert Altman remains one of the most renowned directors.
I knew that this was the crossroads. Understand what I'm saying? My life ended that night. This guy is out there in the woods laughing. Singing. Yes, I knew they were using me. Of course signing a pact with the devil. I'll stare at that woman to see a sight of that.
His film Secret Honor, based on a play, is a one-man show, one man contending with his downfall and contending with a number of unseen forces.
My client had faced, as you know, the acid test of six major crises.
And at the root of these forces is a cabal so shadowy that it can only be alleged, apparently, in fiction. One that can never be explained in factual reality in the papers, and it can only be named in the conspiratorial realm.
See, there was the tip of the iceberg theory. Oh, yes. Then there was the narrow escape theory. The rubber baron baloney and all that crap. That's rich.
For it can't be believed by the Americans living inside the bubble of the American dream.
You can see why. I believe deeply in the American dream. The American dream has come true. He sleeps the sleep of childhood and dreams its dreams.
Even if the figureheads of that dream are trapped in a hellish nightmare.
It is an impossible dream. Impossible dream. I am not the American nightmare. I am the American dream, period. And that is why the system works. Because I am the system.
And Nixon did go to Bohemian Grove, where behind the theatrics of the dramatic arts and bohemian commune, a powerful, shadowy cabal had built up a place to network. Among the redwoods and inside the very club that proclaimed, "Weaving spiders come not here."
First night up there in the Grove, I couldn't sleep all night. And then the men, you know, they're laughing, singing, dancing, you know, football songs, you know, mostly.
In reconciling his own failings and the pervasive feeling of media persecution.
You've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. But as I leave you, I want you to know you don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Can only be done by having fictional Nixon acknowledging that the very shadowy forces that propped up his career and his political image had set him up, had framed him, and left him holding the bag to appear as ringmaster rather than the political puppet that he truly was.
Because we are all small fry nothings compared to the big guys up there at Bohemian Grove.
Secret Honor recaps the factual basis that Nixon sought higher office as one would respond to a classified ad, seeking a politician, seeking a war veteran, to do Washington's dirty work at the hands of powerful advisors, mostly unknown.
I'm trying to tell you about 1945. I was just getting out of the Navy. An ad appeared. Young man, interested in running for Congress, veteran preferred. I did, Your Honor. I answered the ad. And then they listed the name of a committee. So they did, Your Honor. They selected me. And they took my client up to Bohemian Grove. Now that is where the China plan was at. That's where I got the message.
Bohemian Grove, beloved by California's newspaper syndicates, largely bolstered California's biggest politicians, and the right endorsement could make or break election, even for a senator or a governor. In 1967, Nixon had to battle it out with Reagan behind the scenes to see who'd be the Republican candidate for president in 1968, by way of currying favor with the power brokers of the Bohemian Grove set. At the time, Reagan took to the papers proclaiming that he was the favorite son from California and dissuading Nixon from trying to campaign during the Bohemian retreat. In the end, Nixon emerged victorious, and Reagan had to wait another decade for his turn in president. But Nixon's visit with the Bohemians seemed to come with some strain, perhaps a hint at the real reasons behind his recorded comments, where he called the Grove the most blank-blank GD thing he'd ever seen.
But the upper class in San Francisco is that way. The Bohemian Grove that I attend from time to time. But it is the most f***ing thing you can ever imagine in San Francisco crowd that goes in there.
And Nixon wasn't the only one who seemed uncomfortable by the setting that Bohemian Grove presented in their path to power. Circa 1958, a disgruntled Governor Goodwin Goody Knight was overheard talking on the phone to his campaign office from an Italian restaurant and hinted at some of the political intrigue and triangulation ongoing during his contentious bid for the Senate, wherein he complained about having to go to Bohemian Grove to drum up support, saying, quote, "I don't want to be around with a lot of millionaires acting like tramps. All you have at Bohemian Grove is dirty food and dirty beds. I won't go unless it'll serve some political purpose," end quote. Knight had been to the Grove several times already, and reluctantly seemed well aware of its kingmaker status in his political career. But just like Nixon, he seemed to regard it as a place he'd rather avoid, but can't seem to shirk away from. Perhaps the news report about his gossipy phone call railing against the Bohemian lifestyle is related to the fact that his U.S. Senate bid failed, and his subsequent campaign to become governor again also failed, as Nixon himself nabbed the GOP nomination in 61, and the unhappy camper Goody Knight was eclipsed and his political career over. And so, according to the paranoid delusions of fictional Nixon, being caught and being disgraced, Nixon actually took a dive on behalf of the American people, as a secret honor sacrifice to the good silent majority Americans.
The hardest possible way. He chose to orchestrate the tapes like a great drama. He chose secret honor. Public shame.
A counter move to prevent his becoming a three-term presidential puppet.
I'm going to accept a draft in 76 for a third term, or take it.
To undermine his role in the agenda of what he calls the Committee of 100 and the shadowy plutocrats who gather a Bohemian Grove.
That is the word that my client received from his masters. You know who they are, too.
A counter move to thwart attempts to use him to solidify a dictatorship inside of America.
My client, Richard Nixon, has just received the word from the Committee of 100. And that word was, here is the plan, Richard.
In an expanded American century, political war machine he could no longer stomach.
Point one of that plan, continue the war in Vietnam until 1976, whatever the cost.
A political war machine that connected Vietnam with the opium drug empire and with the domination of China and the Asian markets overall.
Point three, seal the deal with China against the Soviets and then carve up the markets of the rest of the world.
He went there to begin a new foreign policy with a country we had regarded as an enemy.
That's it. That's the plan, Your Honor. Period.
And here the viewer is tempted to walk away, thinking Nixon was truly insane. Certainly, he had some kind of mental breakdown. But how crazy was Nixon? Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're wrong.
I could have burned the tapes and stonewalled it. Let the big guys fight it out up there in Bohemian Grove. Let the country go fascist. By 1980, that's right, Your Honor, I am booking shooting it out in the streets. I mean civil war in this country by 1977.
Nixon's rise and fall coincided with the rise and fall of countless governments, overthrown, installed, or variously undermined in the post-war period.
I tried to give them their dirty little war in Chile, the CIA, the executive action against Castro.
Under the guises of the Cold War paradigm that Nixon was so emblematic of.
They call themselves the Committee of 100. Name's changed many times over the years, oh yes. Committee for a free Iran, free Guatemala, free Congo, but always Taiwan. Oh yes, always for a free Taiwan.
Who knows better than Nixon the degree of shadowy machinations going on behind the scenes in the American political scene that was otherwise on the placid surface, the realm of gullible American dreamers and used car hucksters, selling hungry Americans the wonders of Nixon burgers?
For that wacko scheme of his to sell Nixon burgers?
Are we to believe that Nixon was, for reasons incomprehensible, the victim of his own madness, tape recording himself, his own rantings, and his own delusions? Or that Nixon, or at least fictional Nixon, had a point, some kind of great hidden truth that he was trying to reveal to Americans who otherwise believed that wars were simply won, that peace was simply settled.
For the forgotten American, for the silent majority, in their name, I should swore all the wise men, all the tough guys.
That freedom simply triumphed, and that the ballot box determined democratically elected leaders.
The founding fathers were nothing more than a bunch of snotty English who never trusted an American president to begin with.
Are there really secret controllers operating a multi-generational conspiracy from the shadows and organized among 100-plus plutocratic, unelected controllers? Or is this place just a summer camp?